this morning. He got here red and wrinkled, scared and crying. Then she took him up and held him to her breast, and he sure was glad to get what Mama offered. Then he went to sleep and put his fears to rest. It didn't seem to matter what he needed. He could always count on Mama to supply. And regardless of the sleep she might be losing, he always found a twinkle in her eye. There ought to be a hall of fame for mamas. Creation's most unique and precious pearls. And heaven help us always to remember that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. She taught him all the attributes of greatness that she knew he couldn't learn away from home. And by the time she wore the cover off her Bible, her hair was gray and her little man was gone. There ought to be a hall of fame for mamas. Creation's most unique and precious pearls. And heaven help us always to remember that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Yes, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. That song was written by Ted Harris. It was released in May of 1987, recorded by Glenn Campbell and Steve Warner, and it made it to number 6 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles and Tracks chart. Maybe some of you remember that country song. Let me say, I just couldn't agree more. There really ought to be a hall of fame for mamas. And I'm glad that we live in a country that sets aside a special day once a year to honor the women who gave us life and love and loyalty and so many of the good things that we enjoy. And when I think of motherhood, I think of the passage that I asked Rick to read to us just a few moments ago. I think about the wise man's description of the worthy woman in Proverbs chapter 31. It is a depiction of the ideal wife and mother, the kind of wife and mother that every woman ought to aspire to be. The wise man's description of the worthy woman is an acrostic poem. Every verse begins with one of the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in ascending order. And I'd like for us to spend our time together this morning looking at what the wise man tells us about this worthy woman. And I want you to notice that the very first thing that he says is that she is a priceless treasure. Our English versions describe her as a worthy woman or a virtuous woman or some say an excellent wife. I understand that the Hebrew word that's used here is elastic enough to kind of encompass all of those kinds of ideas. Interestingly enough, this word that's translated worthy or excellent or virtuous is the one that's used in 1 Samuel 16 and verse 18 to describe the heroic, mighty men of valor that served David. It's a word that Boaz used to describe Ruth in Ruth chapter 3 in verse 11 when he said to her, "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." the worthy woman that the wise man describes in this passage is a woman of character and spirituality. She is like Sarah, who is described by Peter with these words in 1 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6. In this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. The wise man tells us that this virtuous, this worthy, this excellent wife is of inestimable value. She is far above rubies or jewels or pearls. The wise man says in Proverbs 12 and verse 4, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. In the 18th chapter of Proverbs and the 22nd verse, the wise man says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. That was one of my favorite passages when I was a bachelor for all those many years. She is a gift from God. The wise man says in Proverbs 19, verse 14, houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. The English poet Alexander Pope wrote, all other goods by fortune's hand are given. A wife is the peculiar gift of heaven. All right, may I suggest that those who are looking for a worthy woman to marry need to be trusting in and relying on and praying to the God of heaven for his help in finding her. Ladies, if you want to be a good wife and mother, you've got to begin by being a good woman first. And fellas, if you want to find a good wife and mother, you've got to be looking for a good woman. And when you find her, you need to treat her as something special. Peter says in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, husbands, likewise, deal with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Fellas, she should be treated like a Ming vase, not some old garbage can. She should be treated like a princess. And ladies, the wise man wants you to understand that true worth and value is not to be found in climbing the corporate ladder. Is to be found in moral excellence. The worthy woman, the wise man says, is a priceless treasure. And then in the second place, he describes her in verse 11 as a faithful wife. The heart of her husband safely trusts her so that he will have no lack of gain. Her husband has implicit and unqualified trust in his wife. He trusts her with his good name. He trusts her with his children, with his property. And he trusts her completely because she has earned that kind of respect and trust. A husband married to a worthy woman doesn't have to worry when he goes off to work about what his wife will be doing and where she might be going and who she's with and how much money she's going to spend. Unfortunately, that's not always the case with every woman. In Proverbs chapter 7, the wise man describes a very different kind of woman, beginning in verse 18. when she, in her efforts to seduce a naive young man, says, "Come, let us take our fill of love into mourning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day." With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost his life. That gal is certainly not the worthy woman that the wise man is describing here. Notice that he tells us in the last part of verse 11 that she is responsible in her use of their material prosperity. Some women can spend more money than a man could earn in 1,000 lifetimes. And I understand that financial difficulties are the number one reason or cause for divorce in our society today. But a worthy woman doesn't act like that. Instead, she is an asset, not a liability. In verse 12, he says she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She is truly a helper suitable for her husband, as God created Eve to be for Adam. The worthy woman does everything that she can do, everything in her power, to make sure that her children have a godly father. And so she is constantly looking out for both his physical and his spiritual welfare. She's going to support her husband in his career, in his desires, in his leadership, in his religious activities. Have you ever known a woman that undermines her husband in the rearing of their children? Have you ever seen that kind of a thing happen? That's certainly not the kind of woman that the wise man is describing here. And she is certainly in stark contrast to Job's wife, who in the very depths of his despair said, "Curse God and die." The worthy woman will be an asset through thick and thin, good times and bad times, and she will remember her vow that she uttered on her wedding day. She will keep the promise when she said, "I, Lisa, take thee, Mark, to be my lawfully wedded husband, to have and to hold from this day forward in sickness and in health, in adversity and prosperity, to love and to cherish until death do us part." In the next section of the poem, in verses 13 through 19, the wise man describes her as a willing worker. I'm not going to take the time to read that entire section again, but I want to highlight some things that the writer tells us here. First of all, she's a worker. She's not the kind of woman who's afraid to get her hands dirty, afraid to break a fingernail or mess up her hairdo. Wool and flax were used to make linen. And the wool and the flax were first made into yarn or thread, and then the yarn or the thread was made into cloth, and then the cloth was made into garments. It was quite a task to make clothing in Bible times. The two trips that I've been fortunate enough to make to Israel, we visited Nazareth village, which is kind of a recreation of first century Nazareth. And there's a woman in one of the little areas there, and she demonstrates how that the women spun the yarn into thread. And they didn't have spinning wheels like we are accustomed to as far as colonial days in this country is concerned. But it was quite a process. In Bible times, they couldn't go down to the local department store and grab a dress off the rack. If they were to have clothing, they had to make it, starting from scratch, you might say. Well, the woman that the writer here describes was involved in that kind of work. And she did that willingly. She works hard for her family because she loves them and because she wants the very best for them. I'm reminded as I think about this of the words of Jacob, or rather what the text says about Jacob. In Genesis 29 and verse 20, you remember that he wanted to marry Rachel and Laban tricked him and he winds up with Leah instead and has to work 7 more years for Rachel. And the text says in Genesis 29:20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. That wasn't an easy time in Jacob's life. He had to deal with drought and frost and sleepless nights. And yet, it seemed as a few days to him because of the love that he had for his beloved wife, Rachel. Despite hard work that may at times seem to be monotonous or boring, the worthy woman enjoys opportunities to serve her family. And verse 14 tells us that she's thrifty in all of this. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Ladies, may I say that your coupon saving and your bargain shopping does not go unnoticed by the Lord, and it should not be unappreciated by your husbands. I've learned something since I got married. I've learned that you've got to buy the right thing at the right time, but you got to get it on sale. That's important to the ladies. As a bachelor, if I needed something or wanted something, I just went and I bought it. Now, I didn't pay too much attention. If I could pay the price, I paid it. But the ladies, they want to buy things on sale. It's not at all uncommon for Kathy to tell me that she found something and she is quick to tell me it was on sale. Well, the worthy woman was a thrifty worker in her home, and she was a tireless worker. Look at verse 15. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservant. Verse 18 says, she perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. We've all heard that old saying that says, a man works from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. Lisa is smiling because I think she can relate to that. There's not many men who could do what housewives routinely do day in and day out, week after week, month after month, year after year. With all the cooking, washing, drying, scrubbing, wiping, changing, ironing, cleaning, mopping, dusting, shopping, dressing, feeding, sewing, mowing, weeding, going. That's the life of a wife and a mother. And verse 16 tells us that she's productive. It says she considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. She's concerned about doing anything and everything that she can to help the betterment of her family. And she is no wimp, ladies and gentlemen. She is strong. Look at verse 17. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. The worthy woman is not afraid of hard work. And verse 19 tells us that she's willing to do humble things. It says she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. But the worthy woman is not just concerned about her family, not just concerned about her husband and her children. She is also a benevolent neighbor. She's concerned about other people outside the home. The wise man says in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. Have you noticed that really good wives and mothers tend to be really good members of a local congregation? They tend to be the kind of people that you can count on in a pinch. They tend to be the kind of people that always show up when there's work to be done. They can be counted on to visit the sick and to prepare meals for those who have lost loved ones, to help out in any way that they can. The worthy woman that's described in this passage was a woman who was kind to those who are less fortunate. The strong and the thrifty are often hard and cold and selfish. But that's not the worthy woman. She is benevolent to the poor. You see, she understands that her response to the poor is an expression of her attitude toward God. The wise man says in Proverbs 14, verse 31, "He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy." You see, our attitude toward God will be reflected in our attitude and our actions towards those who are less fortunate than we. The 19th chapter of Proverbs, in the 17th verse, the wise man says, "He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given." And then the worthy woman that the wise man describes in this passage is a good mother. She has foresight and she is prepared for the future. Verse 21 tells us, "She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet." She's ready for the future. She's ready for the winter time because she's made the necessary preparation ahead of time. When I was a lad, my mom canned a lot of green beans when I was a boy. And Mama did that while she was working full-time for a dentist in the community. Summertime is a busy, busy time for wives and mothers. If you're canning green beans and canning tomatoes and tomato juice, and you're freezing corn, and you're taking care of a garden, but good wives and mothers do all of that so their family will have good, nutritious, tasty food during the winter months. In verse 22, the wise man says, "She makes tapestries for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple." The worthy woman is dignified. She takes pride in her appearance. She doesn't go around the house wearing her hair in curlers. Well, come to think of it, does anybody use curlers these days? Mark's shaking his head no. I guess Now, my mom wore curlers. I guess I'm dating myself here. But humor me, okay? She doesn't go around the house with her hair full of curlers wearing a dirty old terry cloth robe. I think I've mentioned the fact that I love old movies, the old black and white movies. And when I think about this picture of a wife wearing that dirty old terry cloth robe, I think of the movie Come Back Little Sheba with Burt Lancaster and Shirley Booth. I don't know if anybody remembers that movie or not, but that was kind of Shirley Booth in that movie. A woman exhibits a woman's touch in the home. When I moved to Johnson City in 1997, I was a bachelor living in an apartment. And during those years, I had one thing hanging on the wall. Nothing else. And that one thing was a printer's tray where you put little knick-knacky kinds of things. You know what I'm talking about. That was the only thing on my wall in that apartment. And that one thing was on the wall because there were a couple of ladies in the congregation that kind of helped me set up the kitchen. And while I was out running an errand, doing something else, I came back and those ladies had put that one thing on the wall. Do you suppose that one thing would have made it to the wall if they hadn't put it there, Tammy? Ain't no way. But it's the ladies that make a house a home. The wise man tells us in verse 23 that the worthy woman is a blessing to her husband. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. The city gate was a place where legal transactions would take place, where legal business was conducted, where the elders of a city would render judicial judgments. You may recall that it was in the city gate where Boaz went through all of the legal rigmarole to redeem Ruth so that she could be his wife. The wise man tells us in verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. She's industrious. And verse 25 says, strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. So she's clothed not just with scarlet garments. She is clothed with strength and dignity. And she laughs, the wise man says, at the future. Not because she is arrogantly self-confident, but because she is optimistic and prepared for the future. The wise man tells us in verse 27 that she rules her household effectively and efficiently. He writes, she watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. God intends for wives and mothers to rule the household. Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, therefore I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully.
a wise woman, the wise man tells us in Proverbs 14:1, builds her house. He says the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. The wise woman knows what's going on in her family, and the worthy woman is a wise teacher. The wise man says in verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. It has almost become proverbial to associate gossip with the fairer sex. Is that not true? Paul describes certain young widows in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13 by saying, and besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Well, the worthy woman is not like that. She's not a gossiping busybody who sticks her nose into everybody else's business. I probably ought to mention the fact that women aren't they're not the only ones who gossip. Men do that too. And sometimes preachers are the worst offenders. But the worthy woman is not some sharp-tongued shrew. She's a teacher. Paul tells us in Titus chapter 2 that older women should be teaching the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Let me remind you that the Apostle Paul knew that the faith that Timothy had first came from his grandmother, Lois, and his mother, Eunice. Finally, the wise man tells us that the worthy woman is a God-fearing servant. And this is the most important thing that we can say about her. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. The kind of woman that the wise man is describing here is adorned with inner beauty. Peter writes in 1 Peter 3, verse 3 and 4, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden passion, or the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. I don't believe that Peter is saying that women can't wear jewelry, that they can't dress nicely. He is saying that the most important thing is the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. That inner beauty is much more important in the eyes of God than the outward beauty. The worthy woman is a woman who fears the Lord. Physical beauty is temporary. The ravages of time will diminish outward beauty. Have you seen those old wedding pictures of your grandparents? My grandmas looked pretty good in their younger days. But now they didn't look quite as good a little bit later on. That's what happens to physical beauty. Physical beauty is superficial. We've all heard that statement that says beauty is only skin deep, but ugliness goes all the way to the bones. The wise man said it this way in Proverbs 11, verse 22, as a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. Physical beauty can be deceptive. And to prove that, I just need to mention the name Delilah. But folks, the fear of the Lord is enduring. It's deep, it's satisfying, it is worthy of honor. And please note, the wise man says in verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. And this is what he says. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. And then the wise man ends this poem with these words, give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. The worthy woman will be praised by her children, by her husband, by her very works. Many years ago, Brother D. Bowman wrote these words. He says, there are a few things in life that rival the beauty of the woman. She defies all attempt at description. She is adorned with the beauty of a butterfly. She is possessed of the tart of the citrus, the honey of the field, the taste of life. She is cunning like a fox, as wise as the owl, as helpless as a lamb. She is the keeper of man, the mother of his children, the teacher of wisdom, the molder of public morality. She is doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. She is druggist and dry cleaner. She is the best of God's gifts to man. And when she is adorned in the feminine frock of frills, ribbons, and bows, and lace, she is at her best. She is woman, the most alluring of God's creatures. A little frail? Yes. A little emotional at times? Surely. A little overreactionary at times? Certainly. But through it all, she is woman, the crowning jewel of God's creation. And she was never meant to be anything else. And so, ladies, may I say thank you for all that you do in your homes and in this church, in this community, and in our nation. And may I say, if you fail in your task, it's not going to matter what the rest of us do. Because the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Let's stand and sing.